It seems indeed that the extremities of the inhabited world have allotted to them, by nature, the fairest things. I laugh when I see that, though many before this have drawn maps of the Earth, yet no one has set the matter forth in an intelligent way, seeing that they draw ocean flowing round the Earth, which is circular, exactly as if drawn with compasses. India is the most distant of inhabited lands towards the east, and in this land the animals, birds as well as four-footed beasts, are much larger than in other places. There is also gold in abundance there, some got by digging, and some carried off from ants. In this desert and sandy tract are produced ants, which are in size smaller than dogs but larger than foxes. There are some of them kept at the residence of the King of Persia. These ants then make their dwelling underground and carry up the sand, and the sand, which is brought up, contains gold. The Ethiopian land is that which extends furthest of all inhabited lands towards the sunset. This produces both gold in abundance and men who are of all men the tallest, the most beautiful, and the most long-lived. The rest of Libya, which is towards the west, is much more frequented by wild beasts and much more thickly wooded. For in the land of these are found both bears and venomous snakes and horned asses, besides the dog-headed men and the headless men with their eyes set in their breasts, at least so say the Libyans about them, and the wild men and wild women and a great multitude of other beasts which are not fabulous like these. Arabia is the furthest of the inhabited lands in the direction of midday, and in it alone of all lands grows frankincense. Frankincense they collect by burning the storax, burning this so as to produce smoke. For these trees which produce frankincense are guarded by winged serpents, small in size and of various colours, and they cannot be driven away from the trees by any other thing but only the smoke of storax. They have also a kind of sheep which are worthy of admiration and not found in any other land. The one kind has the tail long, not less than 3 cubits in length, and if one should allow these to drag these after them, they would have sores from their tails being worn away against the ground. But as it is, every one of the shepherds knows enough of carpentering to make little cars, which they tie under the tails, fastening the tail of each animal to a separate little car. These are the extremities of Asia and in Libya, but as to the extremities of Europe, towards the west, I am not able to speak with certainty, nor do I know of the real existence of tin islands, from which tin comes to us. And secondly, I am not able to hear from anyone who has been an eyewitness, though I took pains to discover this, that there is a sea on the other side of Europe. Then again, towards the north of Europe, there is evidently a quantity of gold by far larger than in any other land. As to how it is got, here again I am not able to say for certain, but it is said to be carried off from the griffins by Arimaspians, a one-eyed race of men. But I do not believe this tale either. However, it would seem that the extremities which bound the rest of the world on every side, and enclose it in the midst, possess the things which by us are thought to be the most beautiful and the most rare. It pleased the Carthaginians that Hanno should voyage outside the Pillars of Hercules and found cities, and I set forth with 60 ships of 50 oars and a multitude of men and women, to the number of 30,000, and with wheat and other provisions. After passing through the Pillars, we went on and sailed for 2 days' journey beyond, where we founded the first city, which we called Thymiaterium. It lay in the midst of a great plain. Sailing thence towards the west, we came to Solois, a promontory of Libya, bristling with trees. We settled cities by the sea. Settling thence, we came to the Lyxus, a great river flowing from Libya. By it, a wandering people, the Lyxitas, were pasturing their flocks, with whom we remained some time, becoming friends. Above these folk lived unfriendly Ethiopians, dwelling in a land full of wild beasts, and shut off by great mountains from which they say the Lyxus flows. And on the mountains live men of various shapes, cave dwellers, who, so the Lyxus say, are fleeter of foot than horses. Taking interpreters from them, we sailed 12 days towards the south along a desert, turning thence towards the east 1 day's sail. There, within the recess of a bay, we found a small island, which we settled and called it Cern. From our journey, we judged it to be situated opposite Carthage, for the voyage from Carthage to the Pillars and thence to Cern was the same. Thence we sailed towards the south 12 days, following the shore, which was peopled by Ethiopians who fled from us and would not wait, and their speech the Lixitae who were with us could not understand. We sailed along the shore until we came to a great bay, which our interpreter said was called the Horn of the West. In it there was a large island, and within the island a lake of the sea, in which there was another island. Landing there during the day, we saw nothing but forests, but by night, many burning fires, and we heard the sounds of pipes and cymbals and the noise of drums, and a great uproar. Then fear possessed us, and the soothsayers commanded us to leave the island. Then, quickly sailing forth, we passed by a burning country full of fragrance, from which great torrents of fire flowed down to the sea, but the land could not be come at for the heat. We sailed along with all speed, being stricken by fear. After a journey of 4 days, we saw the land at night covered with flames. And in the midst there was one lofty fire greater than the rest, which seemed to touch the stars. By day, this was seen to be a very high mountain, called Chariot of the Gods. Thence, sailing along by the fiery torrents for 3 days, we came to a bay, called Horn of the South. In the recess of this bay there was an island, like the former one, having a lake in which there was another island, full of savage men. There were women, too, in even greater number. They had hairy bodies, and the interpreters called them gorilli. When we pursued them, we were unable to take any of the men, for they all escaped by climbing the steep places and defending themselves with stones. But we took 3 of the women, who bit and scratched their leaders and would not follow us. So we killed them and flayed them and brought their skins to Carthage, for we did not voyage further, provisions failing us. And now begin the states of the Suiones, situated on the ocean itself. And these, besides men and arms, are powerful in ships. The form of their vessels is peculiar in this respect, that a prow at either extremity acts as a forepart, always ready for running into shore. They likewise honour wealth, and so a single ruler holds sway with no restrictions, and with no uncertain claim to obedience. Arms are not with them, as with the other Germans, at the general disposal, but are in the charge of a keeper, who is actually a slave, for the ocean forbids the sudden inroad of enemies, and besides, an idle multitude of armed men is easily demoralized. And indeed, it is by no means the policy of a monarch to place either a nobleman, a freeborn citizen, or even a freedman at the head of an armed force. Beyond the Suiones is another sea, sluggish and almost motionless, which, we may certainly infer, girdles and surrounds the world, from the fact that the last radiance of the setting sun lingers on till sunrise, with a brightness sufficient to dim the light of the stars. Even the very sound of his rising, as popular belief adds, may be heard, and the forms of gods and the glory round his head may be seen. Only thus far, and here rumour seems truth, does the world extend. At this point on the Suevic Sea, on its eastern shore, washes the tribes of the Estai, whose rites and fashions and style of dress are like those of the Suevi, while their language is more like the British. They worship the mother of the gods and wear as a religious symbol the device of a wild boar. This serves as armour. They often use clubs, iron weapons but seldom. They are more patient in cultivating corn and other produce than might be expected from the general indolence of the Germans. But they also search the deep, and are the only people who gather amber, which they call glessum, in the shallows, and also on the shore itself. Barbarians as they are, they have not investigated or discovered what natural cause or process produces it. To them, it is utterly useless. They gather it in its raw state, bring it to us in shapeless lumps, and marvel at the price which they receive. It is in fact a juice from trees, as you may infer from the fact that there are often seen shining through it reptiles, or even winged insects, which, having become entangled in the fluid, are generally enclosed in the substance as it hardens. I am therefore inclined to think that the islands and countries of the West, like the remote recesses of the East where frankincense and balsam exude, contain fruitful woods and groves, that these productions, acted on by the near rays of the sun, glide in a liquid state into the adjacent sea and are thrown up by the force of storms on the opposite shores. Closely bordering on the Suiones are the tribes of the Sitones, which, resembling them in all else, differ only in being ruled by a woman. So low have they fallen, not merely from freedom, but even from slavery itself. Here, Suevia ends. The Feni are strangely beastlike and squalidly poor. Neither arms nor homes have they, their food is herbs, their clothing skins, they bed the earth. They trust wholly to their arrows, which, for want of iron, are pointed with bone. The men and the women are alike supplied by the chase, for the latter are always present and demand their share of the prey. The little children have no shelter from wild beasts and storms, but a covering of interlaced boughs. Such are the homes of the young, such the resting place of the old. Yet they count this greater happiness than groaning over field labour, toiling at building and poising the fortunes of themselves and others between hope and fear. Heedless of men, heedless of gods, they have attained that hardest of results, not needing so much as a wish. All else is fabulous, as that the Helusi and Oxiones have the faces and expressions of men with the bodies and limbs of wild beasts. All this is unauthenticated, and I shall leave it open. The country of Da Qin is on the west of the Great Sea, west of Arshi and Chaoshi. Formerly, it was wrongly believed that, going over 200 days west of Chaoshi, one came near the place where the sun sets. Now, one comes near the place where the sun sets by going west of Da Qin. Formerly, Chaoshi was wrongly believed to be in the west of Da Qin. Now, its real position is known to be east. Formerly, it was also wrongly believed to be stronger than Arshi. Now, it is changed into a vassal state, said to make the western frontier of Arshi. This country is on the west of the sea, whence it's commonly called Haixi. There is a river coming out from the west of the country, and there is another great sea. In the west of the sea, there is a city of Alisan. At the city of Alisan, you travel by river on board one ship, then make a round at sea, and after 6 days' passage on the great sea, you arrive in Da Qin. There are in the country in all over 400 smaller cities. Its size is several thousand li in all directions of the compass. The residence of their king lies on the banks of a river estuary. They use stone in making city walls. In this country there are the trees sun, huai, su, bamboos, rushes, poplars, willows, the wu tung tree, and all kinds of other plants. The people are given to planting on the fields all kinds of grain. Their domestic animals are the horse, the donkey, the mule, the camel, and the mulberry silkworm. There are many jugglers who can issue fire from their mouths, bind and release themselves, and dance on 20 balls. In this country they have no permanent rulers, but when an extraordinary calamity visits the country, they elect as king a worthier man while discharging the old king, who does not even dare to feel angry at this decision. The people are tall and upright in their dealings, like the Han, but wear foreign dress. They call their country another Middle Kingdom. They always wished to send embassies to Zhongguo, but the Arshi wanted to make profit out of their trade with us and would not allow them to pass their country. They can read foreign books. They regulate by law public and private matters. The palace buildings are held sacred. They host flags, beat drums, use small carriages with white canopies, and have postal stations like the Han. The number of inhabitants cannot be stated. This country is the largest in the west of Shangling. The number of small rulers established under its supremacy is very large. The people live close together. They have no robbers and thieves, but there are fierce tigers and lions who will attack travelers, and unless they go in caravans, they cannot pass the country. They have several times 10 small kings. The residence of their king is over 100 li in circuit. They have official archives. The king hears the cases of one palace in the morning till being tired at night. The next morning he goes to another palace. In 5 days he has completed his round. 36 generals always consult upon public matters. If one general does not go to the meeting, they do not consult. When the king goes out, he usually gets one of his suite to follow him with a leather bag, into which petitioners throw a statement of their cases. On arrival at the palace, the king examines into the merits of each case. They use crystal in making the pillars of palaces, as well as implements of all kinds. They make bows and arrows. They make gold and silver money. One coin of gold is worth 10 of silver. They weave fine cloth and say they use the down of water sheep in making it. It is called Hai Su Pe. In this country, all the domestic animals come out of the water. Some say that they do not only use sheep's wool, but also the bark of trees, and the silk of wild silkworms in weaving cloth. Their colours are of brighter appearance than are the colours of those manufactured in the countries on the east of the sea. Further, they were always anxious to get hand silk for severing it in order to make Hu Ling, for which reason they frequently trade by sea with the countries of Arshi. The seawater, being bitter and unfit for drinking, is the cause that but few travellers come to this country. The hills in the country produce inferior jade stones of 9 colours. The following products are frequently found in Da Qin: gold, silver, copper, iron, lead, tin, tortoises, white horses, red hare, tortoise shell, black bears, large conches, carnelian stones, southern gold, kingfisher's gems, ivory, real white pearls, amber, corals, 10 colours of opaque glass, vis-a-vis carnation, white, black, green, yellow, blue, purple, azure, red and red-brown, rock crystal, 5 colours of pie, 10 kinds of jade, vis-a-vis yellow, white, black, green, a brownish red, crimson, purple, gold, yellow, azure, and a reddish yellow. 5 colours of rugs, jiangti, damasks of various colours, asbestos cloth, storax, and in all, 12 kinds of vegetable fragrant substances. After the road from Da Qin has been performed from the north of the sea by land, another road was tried which followed the sea from the south and connected with the north of the outer barbarians at the 7 principalities of Chaoxi. And there was also a water road leading to Yichao and Yangchang. It is for this reason that curiosities come from Yangchang. Formerly, only the water road was spoken of. They did not know there was an overland route. To the west of Da Qin, there is the water of the sea. West of this is the water of a river. West of the river, there is a large range of hills extending from north to south. West of this, there is the Qi Shui. West of the Qi Shui, there is the White Jade Hill. West of this, there is the Dark River, which is reported to be the western terminus of the world. Next to the Sogdiani dwell at the foot of the mountains which they call the Sogdi, through whose territories 2 rivers flow which are navigable by ships, the Araxates and the Dymas. These streams rush headlong over mountains and valleys into a level plain and form a lake, Oxia by name, which is both long and broad. Here, among other towns, Alexandria, Sarachata and the metropolis Drepsa are famous. Next to these are the Sakai, a tribe of savages inhabiting a rough country only for cattle and hence without cities. It is overhung by the mountains Ascaminia and Comidas, along the base of which and through a village which they call Athenas Pergos, a very long road extends, which is the route taken by the traders who journey from time to time to the land of the Seres. Beyond those lands of both Scythias, towards the east, the summits of lofty walls form a circle and enclose the Serres, remarkable for the richness and extent of their country. On the west, they are bounded by the Scythians, and on the north and the east, they extend to a snow-clad waste. On the south, they reach India and the Ganges. There are mountains there called Aniba, Nasivisium, Asmira, Ermadon, and Aporocora. Through this land, consisting of a plain of wide extent, surrounded on all sides by precipitous cliffs, two rivers of famous name, the Oachartis and the Bautis, flow in a somewhat slow course. On this very fruitful soil dwell various peoples, of which the Anthropophagi lie towards the north and the snows. The Serres themselves live a peaceful life, forever unacquainted with arms and warfare, and since to gentle and quiet folk ease is pleasurable, they are troublesome to none of their neighbours. Their climate is agreeable and healthful. There is an abundance of well-lighted woods, the trees of which produce a substance which they work with frequent sprinkling, like a kind of fleece. Then, from the wool-like material mixed with water, they draw out very fine threads, spin the yarn, and make sericum, formerly for the use of the nobility, but nowadays available even to the lowest without any distinction. The Serres themselves are frugal beyond all others, live a quiet life, and avoid intercourse with the rest of mortals. And when strangers, in order to buy threads or anything else, cross the river, their wares are laid out, and with no exchange of words, their value is estimated by the eye alone. And they are so abstemious that they hand over their own products without themselves getting any foreign ware in return. Beyond the Serres live the Ariani, exposed to the blasts of the north wind. Through their lands flows a river called the Arius, large enough to carry ships, which forms a great lake called by the same name. Moreover, this same Aria has many cities, among which the following are renowned: Vitaxa Sarmatina, Sotira, Nisibis, and Alexandria, from which the voyage to the Caspian Sea is reckoned at 1500 stadia.